Who was confused about whether we were meeting tonight? Raise your hand. Yeah, I apologize for that. I think that's my fault. But I think there was a time we were going to meet, and then we weren't going to meet, and then we were going to meet, and then we met. So anyway, the cafe is undergoing I'm sworn to secrecy. So they told me I couldn't tell you what they're doing in the cafe, or else I'd have to resign. So anyway, the cafe, they'll be done by Sunday, though, so make sure you get into the cafe and check that out. On Sunday, there's some free coffee at the back for you tonight. We'll make more if you need it, and that'll be fun. On your chair is a prayer request, and sometime this evening, we would like you to fill that out with at least one prayer request. We're going to do this again on Sunday. I'm going to talk to you about even one again in just a minute. But we want to have a good amount of prayer requests for our even one week of prayer. And so everyone ought to have one thing that they ought to want to pray for. So I know sometimes in a prayer meeting, you know, I'll say, hey, are there any prayer requests? And gosh, you know, it seems like there should be one, and you just can't. But so sometime tonight, and we'll don't put them in the box. We'll just gather them up, or let's see, where can we leave them? Well, I guess you can put them in the box. Is that all right? What do you want? Leave them on the chair. Leave it on the chair. Hand it to Gene, or put it in the box, and. I don't know if we wanted them folded or not. But anyway, we want at least one prayer request from everybody. And you're going to have another one on Sunday. We're going to do this Sunday as well, because when we get together for prayer, we want to really labor in prayer for some of these things. And so, you know, whatever's on your heart, a person, a situation, you know, something specific. You can put your name down if you want. You don't have to. But sometime tonight, please fill that out. We have extra pens if you don't have a pen, or you can borrow one from somebody near you. Even one, I explained. Who wasn't here Sunday? Anybody wasn't here Sunday? Okay. Even one, we've been teasing you a little bit with it. It's based on a meditation we've been doing on Jesus' words to Peter and his other disciples when he said, could you not watch with me for 1 hour? And we began to think about that and think about the value of even 1 hour's prayer, or one person praying, or one church praying. And we have come up with this idea to set aside the first week of January, and we'll do it again either annually or whenever we want to. Each day we're going to have an hour somewhere during that day that people can come and pray together. I'm challenging everybody in our church to find 1 hour that week to come and pray, so that I don't have to say to them, could you not watch and pray with us for 1 hour? And it's going to be a good thing. We're going to start Sunday night in Lemoore, because we happen to be meeting in Lemoore on Sunday nights. And so that'll be the first night where we'll pray. Jake's going to give a devotional, but then we'll have an hour of prayer. Monday and Tuesday, we're going to meet at 6 p.m. here at the church, either in the fellowship hall or in the prayer room, depending on how many people come. Wednesday morning, instead of the normal men's fellowship, we'll meet at 6:30, but it'll be open to anybody who wants to come, men and women. And then Wednesday night, at the time when we meet for Ignite, that'll be dedicated to a prayer meeting as well. Also, Wednesday will be a fast day for those who want to fast and enjoy doing that. Thursday and Friday we'll meet at noon, giving some people who are local and maybe have a different schedule a chance to come in. And then Saturday night we'll finish at the first watch prayer meeting that we've had for a while here at the church. So everybody should be able to find some time in their schedule to meet with us for at least 1 hour. We'll have the prayer request. We're developing a list of requests that we have generally as a church for our leadership and things like that. We'll also have times, I'm sure, of spontaneous singing during that. Will allow for people to read scripture and maybe have a word of prophecy, those kinds of things. These are real fun, exciting spiritual prayer meetings that we're planning on having. So that's the tentative schedule. Well, that is the schedule. It's no longer tentative. That's the schedule. We'll go over it again on Sunday. So that's what's going to be happening. Amen? So pray about our praying and see what the Lord wants to do with that. I'm very excited about how the Lord is leading us. Tonight we're going to take a break from Revelation. We're still going to talk about prophecy. And it's kind of a typical thing. We don't normally get to meet on New Year's Eve, but Calvary chapels all over the world are bound by a rule that if you meet on New Year's Eve, you have to have a prophecy update or a prophecy talk. And I'm obviously joking a little bit about that, but that's the typical New Year's Eve meeting of a Calvary chapel, is to talk about prophecy, either look at the year or do something along those lines. I was talking, Glenn Muschin, who's up in Eureka now, formerly from our fellowship, we sent him up to Eureka to pastor up there. He called me the other day and he says, "Hey, you know, send me some good prophecy websites, because I want to do a prophecy update and be a real Calvary." And so he's doing it, and just about everybody else. So we're going to do kind of a modified thing. Some of you this summer came to the Ignite Lemoore when we just started, and I did a series called The Top 10 Signs That We're in the Last Days or the End Times. And I want to kind of revisit that tonight in a little bit different way, and give you all at once my ideas for the top 10 reasons or the top 10 signs that we're living in the last days. Some of this you've heard before in our prophecy updates. Some of it will be new to you. All of it together is pretty exciting. I have a little article here. I'm not going to read it, but as most of you probably know, Israel is bombing Hamas even as we speak, this terrorist group. Of course, some people can't figure out if they're really terrorists or not, even though they're terrorists and they're killing people. And Israel's bombing them. And so this is all in the news right now. And it's going to continue to be that way until the Lord comes. And so very timely. So what do we think are the top 10 signs that we're living in the end times? I would say that, and these are, in a sense, arbitrary. These are things that I would put on my list. And number 10 would be the exponential explosion of knowledge. Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, you know, reads like this: "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." In its original context, this verse means that the words of Daniel's prophecy would be shut up, meaning not fully understood, until the times of the end. And if you study church history, you're going to find this to be true. At the time of the end, many would run to and fro through the scriptures, comparing text with text, and understand these prophecies. Students of Bible prophecy see a secondary application as well. That many shall run to and fro is a prophecy that in the end times people will travel the globe at tremendous speeds. And secondly, that knowledge shall increase is a prophecy that there will be an explosion of knowledge as we get into the end times. Now, I want to make a case not just for the increase in knowledge, which you could say in every generation, really, but for the exponential increase of knowledge in our lifetime. The information I'm going to cite was compiled on a short video that was produced by the Sony Corporation. And it's kind of a goofy video, because at the end of it, after all this great stuff that ties into Bible prophecy, the video is about not pirating movies, you know, and CDs and stuff. And I thought, okay, they just want to hold your interest and all. But there's some great research that they did. And so this is a little bit all over the map, but it's very interesting when you think about the increase in knowledge. The years it took to reach a market audience of 50 million people. You want to reach 50 million people as an audience. It took radio 38 years to reach that many people. It took television only 13 years. It took the internet 4 years. It took the iPod only 3 years. And it took the internet social website Facebook only 2 years to reach an internet audience of 50 million people. And so there's an exponential increase in these things. The number of internet devices in 1984, I would have said was zero, but it was actually 1,000. In 1992, that number was 1 million. This year, that number surpassed 1 billion. And so from 1984 until today, we've gone from 1,000 internet devices to over 1 billion. The first commercial text message was sent in December of 1992. Today, the number of text messages sent and received every day exceeds the total population of the planet. So those of you who are not texting, you're not part of that. So someone else is doing more than your share. A week's worth of reading the New York Times contains more information than a person was likely to come across in their lifetime in the 18th century. The amount of new technical information is doubling every 2 years. For students in a 4-year technical program, half of what they learn in their first year of study will be obsolete by the third year. So that's interesting. NTT Japan has successfully tested a fiber optic cable that pushes 14 trillion bits per second down a single strand of fiber. That is the equivalent of 2,600 CDs or 210 million phone calls every second. It's estimated that by 2013, a supercomputer will be built that exceeds the computational capabilities of your human brain. By 2049, a computer will exceed the computational capabilities of the entire human race. An exabyte is a unit of information or computer storage equal to 1 quintillion bytes. It is estimated that 4 exabytes of unique information will be generated this year. That is more unique information in 1 year than all the unique information generated in the previous 5,000 years of history. So I would say that we have arrived at the exponential explosion of knowledge that Daniel prophesied. Number 9, global communication technology. Considering there have been about 7,000 years of human history, global communication is a relatively recent phenomena. Instantaneous global communication via satellite or internet are even more recent, just in the past few decades, really. We were at a wedding on Saturday here at the church, and they were walking around with a computer, and I thought, what are you guys doing? And they were Skyping with people. They were talking over the internet on the other side of the country. And, I remember having the first cell phone that was here in Kings County just when the kids were, in high school. It was the size of this podium. It was huge. We called it the brick phone. It was a giant Motorola phone that looked like those old walkie-talkies in World War II movies, 10-4, and it never worked anyway, but, it was a big phenomena, and now, everybody has several cell phones and Bluetooth and all of this. And so instantaneous global communication, it's a sign that we're living in the end times, because when you read through the book of the Revelation in chapter 11, you come across the story of the two witnesses. Now, we've seen this in our studies here on Wednesday night. Revelation 11:3 says, I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. These two witnesses will play a vital role in world evangelism during the first half of the 7-year Great Tribulation. They're going to, as you read in Revelation, they have the ability to perform miracles, and they will, for the time of their ministry, be indestructible. No one will be able to harm them or lay a hand on them. After the 1,260 days of their earthly evangelistic crusade, the world leader known to us as the Antichrist will be enabled to overcome them and kill them. Their execution is described like this: and their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. It's Jerusalem, but John is describing it in its end time spiritual condition. And then those people from every tribe, tongue, nation will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put into graves. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them, make merry and send gifts to one another, because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. Now, after the 3.5 days, the breath of life from God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those who saw them. And they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, come up here. And they ascended to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies saw them. Now, the Apostle John was writing these words under the inspiration of God in the first century A.D. In those days, communication was by messenger running along Roman roads. And those guys were fast, but it would take a while to get someplace. But he said of the death and resurrection of these two witnesses, and I'm going to quote this again, says, then those from the people, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put into the graves. After 3.5 days, the breath of life of God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those who saw them, and their enemies saw them. And so John is telling us that all of this will be seen, and it will be seen by every person of every nation, tribe, and tongue on planet Earth. Now, that is a fantastic prophecy. It's Jules Vernian when you think about it from the point of view of the first century, when no one really saw anything unless they were in the immediate audience. Instantaneous global communication is so common today that we can overlook this amazing prophecy that was silly to even contemplate. These are the kinds of things the Bible says that people say, well, the Bible can't be literal. We shouldn't take it literally. It must be figurative or allegorical because obviously this could never happen. And even 25, 30 years ago, we wouldn't even have imagined this was happening. The first satellite television transmissions didn't start until the 60s. I think one of the very first satellite transmissions was from one of the Olympics in the 1960s. And so this is an amazing prophecy, God going on record saying, hey, in the end times, the whole world will be able to watch instantaneously what's happening in Jerusalem. And that's one of the reasons that I'm saying, hey, we're living in those times. Number eight, references to the days of Noah. This is fast becoming one of my favorites. I always thought that the days of Noah just had to do with interest in perhaps finding Noah's ark again, and that, you know, one day they would actually find the ark, or whether they actually call it the ark or not, you know, they would know that, hey, yeah, we really have it. Now, we really have gopher wood, not just some guy's idea of what gopher wood might be, you know, that, hey, this is it. And there have been a lot of developments in technology in identifying the location, the possible location of Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat. There's some satellite imaging and different things that have happened. Jesus said, but as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Then there's the whole aspect of corruption and violence, which was typical in the days of Noah. And you could make a case statistically that we live in incredibly violent times, more so than any other time. More interesting, though, are some things that have developed really just this year when it comes to the days of Noah. This was my favorite prophecy update all years when I told you about the Noahides. Do you remember the Noahides? How many were here on Sunday when I talked about the Noahides? This blew my mind. The Noahides are organizing for the very first time. B'nai Noach, literally children of Noah, are Noahides. They are non-Jews, Gentiles, who take upon themselves voluntarily the obligations for non-Jews from the Torah, consisting of seven laws passed on from Noah following the flood. The court of 71 rabbis, known as the Sanhedrin, which was reestablished last October in Tiberias, decided after numerous requests from Noahides around the world to assist the movement in forming together and having a leadership. One of the primary functions of that council, that leadership council, is going to be the creation and development of outreach materials for the world. So they're going to have Noahide evangelism. Although Judaism does not require or encourage non-Jews to become Jewish, the observance of the seven laws of Noah is incumbent upon humanity, and widespread observance is to be worked towards even through active proselytization. And so these guys are saying, hey, when Noah came out of the ark, these are the rules that were for all of mankind, not just Jews. And the Jewish Sanhedrin is saying, okay, we'll buy that. We don't really, you know, we're not really wanting to proselyte people to become Jews, but we do believe that every Gentile should live according to the laws of Noah. And so this year, this last few months, in California, by the way, they had this meeting of the Noahides, and this representative of the Jewish Sanhedrin, which is another amazing thing that hasn't happened in centuries, and they're talking about how to reach the world so that it can be as it was in the days of Noah. And Jesus said, as the days of Noah will, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's too good. I mean, I keep looking at different references to see, is this really the Wall Street Journal's website, or is this some crazy guy that spun out this yarn, you know? And it's true. And then there's this is my newest discovery towards the end of this year, the whole UFO thing. Because as the days of Noah, you remember the big problem in the days of Noah was what? these sons of God, who we believe were demons, were coming down and they were cohabiting with human women and they were producing this a weird offspring. And God said, hey, that's it. We can't do that anymore. And that's one of the reasons he brought the flood. And as I think it was this last Sunday in our update, I started to realize, and I'm looking at some research now, that all of these UFO sightings, and especially the abductions, are all very, very much like what was going on in the days of Noah. Even to the point where whenever you watch these crazy UFO shows, there's always a sexual component to, you know, these people that get abducted, the aliens always do weird things to them sexually. And they have grotesque images about it and stuff. And really what this is, I'm 99% sure that this is demonic activity, demons who are masquerading as extraterrestrials in order to bring a deception upon the human race. It's really the only rational explanation. Either there are extraterrestrials or this is all demonic. Because some of this stuff is real. I mean, you've got police officers and airline pilots and military officers. And I mean, people with real credibility who see these UFOs and who tell these stories. And then you've got these UFOs, they defy gravity. They do all these crazy otherworldly things. They're demonic. They're demons. They're possessing people. They're taking people. You can't just say, oh, those people are crazy. Something is happening. And UFO sightings are on the rise. I think I told you it was up 700% in Pennsylvania. It's like the UFO capital of the world all of a sudden. And so it's interesting, too. I don't make too much of this, but I was just thinking about it. It is interesting that the mother of all UFO things is what? Roswell, right? Everybody's heard of Roswell. You know, they go way back. The ufologists, they're called, they'll go way back into history and show cave writings of UFOs and all these kinds of crazy things that you see from the sky and all that. So, you know, they believe UFOs have been around for a long time. Of course, they have, because there have been demons around for a long time. But it's interesting that the modern UFO phenomena started in 1947 with Roswell, which was right at the time that Israel was becoming a nation again in May of 1948. And so I can't make a biblical connection with that, but it is a very interesting thing. Number 7, the rise of Europe as a superpower. One of the most common phrases you hear in any discussion of Bible prophecy is the revived Roman Empire. It's the designation scholars give to the last days government described in a passage in the book of Daniel. We're going to run out of time, so I'm going to cut through to some of this. Let me just tell you, obviously, the Europe has risen out of the ashes of World War II. You ever seen the pictures of what happened in World War II? I mean, it was devastating. Europe has risen out of that and become a bona fide superpower, so much so that if you read things outside of the United States, the world is looking more to Europe and the European Union than they are to the United States as a leader in the future. Now, here's some ominous real facts about the European Union with regard to biblical prophecy. The EU flag consists of 12 stars on a field of blue. This is a quote. It's the Corona Stellarum Duodecim, the crown of 12 stars of the woman of the apocalypse. Former Secretary General of the Council of Europe, Leon Marshall, said in 1973, No matter that the 12 stars in the Bible are a reference to the nation of Israel, they have adopted that for themselves as the woman of the apocalypse. The anthem of the EU is Ode to Joy, the prelude to the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. The lyrics to Ode to Joy were written by Friedrich von Schiller and concern the entering into the shrine of a pagan goddess and the uniting of all men in brotherhood by the power of magic, according to Adrian Hilton, author of The Principality and Power of Europe. The European Parliament building in Strasbourg, France, is an enormous replica of the unfinished Tower of Babel. It's called the Tower of Eurobabel by the European press. Dr. David Reagan wrote this in his Lamplighter magazine. An EU poster shows the people of Europe rebuilding the Tower of Babel. The text on the poster says, Europe, many tongues, one voice. The stars on the poster are inverted into pentagrams. The symbol of a woman riding on the back of a beast is often used to represent the European Union. Paintings and sculptures of a woman riding a beast are found at all EU buildings. Dr. Reagan said this is another demonic biblical symbol of a great harlot riding a beast, taken right out of the book of the Revelation. And so they borrow from the Revelation these symbols, which we take to be extremely anti-Christian, and these are their symbols. The EU segues nicely into our number six sign, movement towards regional world government. The EU is the regional government we're most familiar with. It's a political and economic union now of 27 member nations. As I said, you can find a lot of op-ed articles referring to the increasing influence of the EU in global affairs. Notably, in the Middle East, the EU is mentioned more prominently than the United States as the superpower that could possibly bring a lasting peace. The EU is seeking to further expand its influence. Just this year in July, the EU launched, the Union for the Mediterranean. It brought together EU member nations and a number of North African and Middle East countries. It includes the EU's 27 members plus Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Jordan, the Palestinian Authority, Israel, Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, as well as some countries I've never heard of, like Mauritania, Monaco, Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Montenegro, and Albania. And by the way, that map is looking almost exactly like the farther reaches of the ancient Roman Empire. Then there is an African Union consisting of 53 African nations, started forming in 2002. At the third South American summit in 2004, presidents or representatives from 12 South American nations signed the Cusco Declaration. It's a two-page statement of intent announcing the foundation of the Union of South American Nations. Panama and Mexico attended the signing as observers. The members are Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru. Those three nations, by the way, by themselves call themselves the Andean community, and Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Venezuela, and Guyana, Suriname, and Chile. The leaders announced their intention to model that community after the EU, including a common currency, parliament, and passport. Then there's the Association of Southeastern Nations. That's been around since 1967. Just this year, Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd suggested that Asian and Pacific countries, including China, India, and Japan, form a regional bloc similar to the EU, an Asia-Pacific community of nations. And though we're obviously against it, a North American union consisting of the United States, Canada, and Mexico has been talked about for years. Officials from all three nations say there are no official plans. However, former President of Mexico, Vicente Fox, says ultimately it has to happen. They already have a currency called the Amero. So if you're getting change at Starbucks and you get an Amero, don't take it. Revelation 13 prophesies that a global government with seven heads and ten horns will come into existence just before the return of Jesus Christ. There's a lot of conjecture as to exactly what that represents, but it represents some sort of parceling up of the globe into regional governments. And nations forming regions is exactly what you'd expect, and that's exactly what you find. Number five, the technology for a global cashless economic system. This is so common now that it almost doesn't seem like prophecy that we would have a microchip inserted or some other kind of a reader so that we don't have to have cash or credit cards. My top technology story of 2009 puts it into perspective. An article on Biometric Watch was titled "E-Smart Technology Will Deliver 20 Million Super Smart Cards to Samsung." This was so interesting to me because if you go to the website of the manufacturer, it says this. E-Smart announces its next generation super thin polymer flexible circuit biometric super smart card, and the name of it is I Am. That is the name of that card. And I had to research this from several different angles because I hear the craziest prophecy thing sometimes. Not too long ago, I was at a meeting where a guy said that FEMA in February of 2009 is going to start executing Christian pastors and certain right-wing conservative talk show hosts, and that they're going to do it in the Mojave Desert where they have gas chambers all set up to do it already. And you go to this crazy website and you see all these mobile homes set up and it looks like a prison. And it turns out it's just where they're storing their mobile homes, FEMA. And then because FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Association, they do have pretty far reaching powers. I mean, if you have a disaster, they come in and, they can declare martial law. They can suspend the Constitution. They can do a lot of things. And you want them to because you're going to drown. You're going to die and stuff. And so they tie all this together. And a lot of this stuff, if you research it, it's just not true. And it gives Christianity a bad name. This is true. They're going to have this card called I Am. I mean, that's as in your face as you can get. The alignment of nations hostile to Israel is number four. Again, we're running out of time. I go over this all the time, but in Ezekiel chapter 38, when it talks about the nation of Persia, we're talking about modern-day Iran, which has never had an alliance with the Russians until recently. And yet it is one of the key nations allied with Russia in the Ezekiel 38 and 39 passage, being drawn by God into the Middle East to attack Israel in the last days. All the other nations are lining up as well. It mentions Libya and Ethiopia and all of the nations of the former Soviet Union, some of the Muslim nations in Turkey and such. And so that's happening before our very eyes. Number three would always be the international conflict over the nation of Israel. Reading the Bible literally, you expect Israel to be an international dilemma in the last days. The prophet Zechariah summarizes it nicely when he says in Zechariah 12:3, "And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all people. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it." Ever since Israel became a nation in May of 1948, there's been conflict in or over the Middle East. Israel has indeed been and is a heavy stone in the international community. As I started tonight, tonight and every night, there's always something going on that revolves around Israel, the Middle East, the problem that Israel creates by her mere existence in the Middle East. And that's been going on since the late 40s. The number two sign that we're living in the end times are the plans to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. Jesus and Daniel both tell us that there will be a temple in the tribulation. And so there's going to have to be the rebuilding of a temple on the Holy Mount. The Holy Place and the Holy of Holies are the two rooms of the Jewish temple. Thus Daniel predicted and Jesus validated the prediction that there would be a literal temple. For many years, scholars believed that the Muslim mosque, the Dome of the Rock, was built on the site where the tribulation temple would have to be built. But in recent years, the work of two men, Dr. Asher Kaufman and Tuvia Segev, has suggested that the temple could be built on its original site without disturbing the Dome of the Rock. Both of these guys have postulated theories based on a lot of good archaeological and scientific and technical research that the actual site is somewhere a little bit different, and you can draw it so that the Jewish temple can coexist with the Dome of the Rock. When I was a young Christian, I was always waking up wondering if we had blown up the Dome of the Rock yet, because that's what prophecy teachers used to talk about. We're going to have to blow up the Dome of the Rock so that the Jews can build their temple, because they can't coexist. But in fact, they can coexist because the Muslims got it wrong. They didn't build over the place of sacrifice like they thought they were. They built somewhere else. The temple itself, I used to think, wow, that's a pretty magnificent structure. You see Herod's temple that Jesus went into, and I mean, it's one of the wonders of the ancient world. Herod, he was a crazy, murderous dictator, but man, could that guy build. I mean, you talk about a contractor. I mean, he was Herod Construction is who you wanted in those days. I mean, he was the top guy. He innovated some things. He built domes. They didn't know for years how they did it. And then they figured out he built them over sand, and then he removed the sand. I mean, this guy, all he did when he wasn't killing people was build. And I mean, this guy could build like crazy. And so you look at that and you think, it's going to take, even with modern techniques, it's going to take decades to build that. How do you build that thing and get through the tribulation? But the reality is the actual temple is only the holy place and the holy of holies. It's only 2,700 square feet. That's the temple. Everything else is just around the temple. And so my house isn't 2,700 square feet. My house is only 1,400 square feet. So you could build a 2,700 square foot basically rectangle in pretty fast time. I mean, any contractor could do that, even We like to pick on contractors, you know. I have my favorite contractor who brought his job in on time. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. So then there's a whole bunch of stuff I could talk to you about tonight about the Temple Institute and all of the implements for the temple that are getting ready, the clothing for the high priest, the fact that just in the past few years, DNA research has enabled people to discover the gene for the Kohens, the Kohanim gene that will identify who the real priests are. This is something that's just happened not only in our lifetime, but just very, very recently. They've already identified 17 or 13 out of 17 who have tested positive for this gene so that they can say, yeah, you guys qualify to be priests. This is fantastic stuff that's going on right under our very eyes. The number one sign that we're living in the last days, of course, always has been and always will be the birth of modern Israel as a nation. It is nothing short of miraculous historically. Isaiah 66, verse 8, who has heard of such a thing? Who has seen such things? Shall the earth be made to give birth in one day? Shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion was in labor, she gave birth. The nation born at once in one day, literally, was Israel. God regathered his chosen people to their promised land on May 14 of 1948, and they were reborn. He promised to scatter them. He did. He promised to regather them. He has. The birth of modern Israel as a nation is nothing short of miraculous on any level, on any level. Even unbelievers who just talk about it say it's a miracle. They don't use it in the same sense that we do, but it's an amazing thing. And I believe the single most important and obvious sign that we are living in the last days. When all of these things converge, these 10 things and other things that we could bring in, when all of these things converge, we know that we're living in the days just before the Great Tribulation. And if we know that, then how much more are we excited about the imminent rapture of the church? Because we know nothing has to happen before Jesus comes back to resurrect the dead in Christ and to rapture living believers. And so it's not that that is soon. That could happen any time. But as you see these things happening, we are that much closer to the Great Tribulation, then that imminency takes on a great deal more excitement, I think. All right, we're going to have a brief time of prayer. Remember, we want you to fill out these prayer cards and get them back to us. But this is a time we're going to spend about 5 minutes or so in prayer. So get with somebody or pray with whoever you came with. And just let's spend some time in prayer. Do we have any things that we're scrolling? No, we're not scrolling any prayer requests tonight, so you're on your own. But there's plenty to pray for. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, the Bible says. Pray for what's happening in the Middle East. Pray for your workplace. Pray for your family and friends. Pray for safety tonight, those kinds of things. And then the worship team is going to come up, and we're going to worship our way out of our meeting tonight.